everyone. I'm Jen.
I'm Anthony, and this is Bottom Bracket Biking Podcast.
A couple's guide to biking. Hello, and welcome to episode 14.
Hello. This episode, we are going to be talking about up-and-coming places to bike.
In Iowa.
Yes, in Iowa. And then if we have the time at the end, some bike lights and what lights you should get, since riding it or in the evening is kind of hard right now.
Yeah, it gets dark about 5 o'clock at the moment, and guess what time work gets out?
5 o'clock?
Yeah.
I never leave home, so I don't know.
Yay, COVID.
Yeah.
Speaking of things to be not excited about, Anthony, you want to tell the lovely listeners about our day?
I've been thinking about it, and let's just say if we sound a little tired, it's because it's been a long day.
Yeah, we started trying to record this episode about 5 hours ago. Things kind of blew up. There was blood involved. Everyone should be fine. It mostly wasn't our blood. It involved some animals, but oh my goodness, it is just... we're kind of done.
Yeah, if you've ever wondered why dogs at the shelter sometimes say, does not mix with cats, we discovered that today.
We absolutely know why.
So it's been a little bit of a traumatic day. But recording try number 2 now. We have all the animals separated and a cat recovering in the bathroom. And I, oh man, when you say it out loud, it just sounds
so it sounds bad.
It sounds so bad.
The cat is fine. But yeah, it was bad. So anyhow, Anthony, we've got 3 different trails to talk about today, or I guess 4 different trails. 2 of them are in the same town.
Yeah, 3 different towns to talk about.
So let's start with Dubuque.
Dubuque. Does anyone know where Dubuque is? That's fine. I don't know where it's at, and I was there.
It is in northeast Iowa.
Yep, far northeast Iowa. It's about a 3-hour drive for us. Going there and back in one day is rough.
Yeah, since there were 2 of us, like, we switched off when we were driving over and then driving back, which made it, you know, not that bad, but it was a lot of driving for one day.
Yeah, there's a bunch of trails over in eastern Iowa that are fairly well known, but I'd never been up to Dubuque and didn't know they had much up there. And these trails are fairly new, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of them is very, very new. We got invited over with a group, so that was kind of how we decided what trails we were going to, is there were people who had gone before. The first trail system that we went to is called the Interstate Power Preserve.
It was a, I don't know, kind of a big loop. A bunch of it was one way, which is really cool.
Yeah, that was awesome because they could make it to be really, really flowy that direction.
Yeah, and for me, I liked it because I could just haul balls down the trail and not have to worry about, oh, I hope a biker isn't coming the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if the hikers were allowed or not, so I was still cognizant of that.
So they have some trails out there that are actually designated as hiking trails where bikes aren't allowed.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, they're more like double track trails, but they actually, yeah, it's no bikes allowed. So I think a lot of the hikers out there go on just the hiking trails. I did see, and this was right where 2 trails crossed, as I passed some hikers, and I think they were just on the hiking trail. I don't think hikers are forbidden on the biking trails, but it does help keep them off by giving them their own trails. So it's a really good place for hikers and bikers.
Yeah, let's be honest, though. We have no idea if the hikers can be on the bike trails. I was only there once.
Yeah.
But it was, very flowy. There were some sections that you could just, like, flow and jump down, which was really fun.
I liked it because even the uphill sections, it didn't feel like, oh my god, I'm climbing a hill, because they managed to make the uphill flowy, and they'd go, you know, way across a hillside and then do a fun turn and then way back up across the hillside and have some bumps and, or not bumps, some little, like, roller type features in there, which that made it enjoyable because I've been to some places where it is, well, like White Rock, there are some climbs, it's just like, is this ever going to end? I am done with this.
Yeah. I think, well, there were 2 black diamond loops that I thought were really well done.
Yeah. I really loved, Transformer was my favorite. It's the first one on the trail out there.
Did you see the robot?
I did not see the robot.
It was in disguise.
Really?
Get it? Transformer.
So actually,
robot in disguise.
total sidetrack, all of their trails, I'm ignoring you, all of their trails are named something to do with power, because it actually is built right next to a power company. There's a reason it's called Interstate Power.
It's built next to a transformer, a giant transformer for the town.
Okay, that's what it was.
Or something. No, substation is what they
substation,
call it.
Substation, that makes sense.
But yeah. Anyway, it's built by a power company has it.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Electrical isn't exactly our first thing. So, Transformer is the first Black Diamond, and I really enjoyed that. It actually kind of reminded me of some of the trails that I'd been riding in Bentonville in September, which was fun just because I haven't experienced that in Iowa very much. There is actually, I think, two rocky sections where I actually was really glad that I had a dropper post.
Yeah, they had a straight-up drop in there, too, where, like, you could, like, a legit drop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you want to drop 6 foot onto the trail? Here you go.
Yeah, it was... The other nice thing was it was very well marked. So there are several things where it's like, you could do this, even on the... Most of the trails were blue. But they'd have little, like, jumps and things going through it. But you didn't have to do that if you didn't want to.
And then the second Black Diamond I thought was more challenging.
Oh, my God. I think I walked half of it.
I did not.
But it was, like...
It was fun.
It was a right hairpin that, like, honestly, I don't even know how you would basically do a track stand and then turn. And then there's, like, a little bridge, and then the little bridge came back down to a rocky section, and then went back up again between a tree, and then it turned, like, 90 degrees to the left on a rock face. And the other interesting part of all this was it was fall, and so there were leaves everywhere, so you couldn't see all of the things that you were riding, so... I am absolutely not convinced I'm going to be able to ride the second Black Diamond anytime soon, but I do want to go back and try it when it's not covered with leaves.
All right, can we talk about Proving Grounds now?
Yeah, absolutely. So after Interstate Power, which that is on the south side of Dubuque.
South side!
We went up to the north side.
North side!
And checked out Proving Grounds, and this is a very new section.
Yeah, Proving Grounds, it is... Well, I don't know. There was a bunch of trail, and then we got to the top, and the top, there was a fun loop, and I really liked the loop.
Wait. How did you get up to the top?
So, do you remember what the trail was called?
Yep, I do. Scrape Rock Wall.
Yeah, so they scrape rock wall. They call it because they basically scraped a trail into a rock wall. I don't know if that's why they call it that, but that's what they did.
It sounds likely. It is a double Black Diamond. It is the only time in Iowa I have ever seen a trail labeled that.
Yeah, so that trail, it goes from kind of the bottom to the top of the park area,
mm-hmm.
And it is a ton of switchbacks. The switchbacks are steep to another steep, and so if you don't do it just right, you're going to spin out. It was very challenging. I think it would be fun to challenge myself on. The interesting part is that it's a two-way, so you could go down as well as up. The up was very difficult. I think I might have been able to make it down, at least much further on the way down. But you guys took the easier way up, right?
Yeah, I took the double track up. I'd been trying to keep up with some faster riders at Interstate Power Preserve, and my legs were not too thrilled about this. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to try the double Black Diamond up.
And then where did you guys go after you got to the top? Do you remember?
Yeah, we went around. So when you get to the top, there is a loop off to your left and then a loop off to your right. And we went off to the left, and that one has, it's got like a jump line, and then it has a berm line, and then it has just kind of an outer line. So we did three laps of it. We did the outside loop and then the berm loop and then the jump loop, by which I mean, I rolled most of the jumps. They are all rollable. I really, really like the berm line. I've just been starting to get into really, like, you know, taking the berm the way I'm supposed to. So that was really cool that they had a whole thing that was just, like, super steep berms. Kind of like Choo Choo in Bentonville. But, yeah, and then we went over and we did the loop on the right, which didn't have anything like that, but is just, you know, a bit longer. And that's actually where we ran into you coming up the double black.
Yeah, so we got the double black, and then, I don't know, we rode down an area, but the coolest feature that I thought they had was that circular area where you would ride up, and then you would ride kind of down, but they had, like, three different paths you could take.
Yeah, that's the one that I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
To start with. Yeah, that's, Segment and I rode that while we were waiting for you guys.
Oh, do you remember what it was called?
It was called Backdrag, I believe.
Yeah, that looks about right.
Yeah, and then Hot Start and Rim Pull are both the tenth of a mile options that you can take.
And then we rode back down on a Black Diamond that had gap jumps, which, if you don't know how I feel about gap jumps, it is, I hate them.
Yeah, it's called Drop and Catch. And I would really like to go back and do it now that I kind of know what to expect, because we were all riding it blind. And there is this one place, actually there's a couple places where you just couldn't see what was coming. And one time it was just this jump that came straight up, and then it looked like you were just going up a hill, but it was really a jump. And so catching yourself on the backside was not fun. And then there's another place where you came over this little hump and, oh, Rock Garden. So I think that one could be really fun to go session. Like, I like that trail, but yeah, the first time through was a little bit like, I don't know what's coming up.
That's why they call, say, pre-ride, re-ride, and free ride.
Yep.
And I had to remind myself that all the time. But that means that these trails had features.
Yes. It was really fun getting to go try out some things there because, you know, once again, it reminded me more of Bentonville than of a lot of the trails that I get to ride in Des Moines, just because it did have those features.
And then we went home and it was a good time, and we drove 6 hours that day to go to these trails. So I would recommend, if you're going to go there, stay the night in that area. Check out maybe some of the other Eastern Iowa trails.
Yeah, and they did have another trail system there that we didn't get to. So if you did want to, you know, stay overnight, you could do everything one day and drive back the next morning, or you could spread it out over a couple of days. I think it would be worth going. And that's if you're coming from Des Moines, 3 hours. If you're going from a different location, you know, obviously take your time into consideration.
And that is all of Dubuque, right?
Everything that we rode.
Yeah, at least all that we want to talk about. So there are two other trails that I have visited recently, and they are both very new. So we talked to the trail builders in Dubuque, and all of these trails, we ended up talking to the builders.
Mm-hmm.
But these next two I thought were kind of, one's near and dear, since it's right by where I grew up. And the other is kind of a gem in the middle of nowhere.
Well, let's start with the one that's near and dear then.
Yeah, that would be Lake Red Rock, which is by Knoxville, which is by Pella.
Yeah, I think technically they count the trails as Pella. They are on that side of the dam.
No, it's by Knoxville, darn it. We're going to be known for something. So why do I say Knoxville instead of Pella?
Because we grew up in Knoxville?
Because we're from Knoxville, Iowa, not Tennessee. Quit asking me.
When Anthony first started mountain biking in high school, he actually went out. This is at North Overlook at Lake Red Rock, which is on the Des Moines River at the dam between Knoxville and Pella. And there are these hiking trails, and then they had offshoots on them. And I remember we could not figure out at the time if they were mountain bike trails or if they were deer trails.
And the story I got at the time was that they used to be mountain bike trails, but it came and went with whoever was at Central College, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So what it looked like, I mean, they were deer trails at the time. They were deer trails that had enough clearance that you wouldn't get hit by anything.
But yeah, like they hadn't been maintained for probably 3 years or so then. So there are some of them that just dead-ended in a fallen tree, and that was it.
Yeah, or it would turn, but there would be a tree where the turn was, so you couldn't figure out where it was supposed to go. And now, these people over in Pella have done a phenomenal job of recutting them in and making actual mountain bike trails over there.
Yeah, I looked them up. They're not on MTB Project right now. So one of the best ways I'd suggest checking them out is our friends Andy and Lori did a YouTube video on them. They are IAMTB on YouTube. And that's actually how we kind of realized just how re-upped they had been.
Yeah, they looked like they'd been there forever. They were well worn in. There were a couple new cuts that people were working on. And there was this one section that had these huge like drops that just were totally unexpected for that area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for Iowa in general, you wouldn't expect big old drops that scare your pants off. They were done by, I think, the guy who owns the bike shop over there?
Yep.
I forget who it is. And they're called the Red Rock Area Mountain Bike Association, I think, RAMBA, which is awesome. It's like Rambo's evil sister.
Yeah, the guy, I think, is involved with the Iowa Bike Co. bike shop in Pella.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't get to talk to him, but I talked to one of the people who worked on it, and it sounds like just a couple guys went out and they said, hey, we're going to re-put these trails back in. And then they did, and you know, it drew me from Johnston, Iowa. I talked to a guy who came from Chicago. He was in the area and thought he'd check them out. I mean, this is what these mountain bike trails do.
Well, there's a ton of other recreation below the dam. There's a lot of paved trails. There's camping there. It's actually, so North Overlook is the name of the campground right there. So, like, if you're looking to do a weekend trip, there is a beach, there is fishing, there are playgrounds for kids, there is multiple campgrounds.
Or more relevant, there's a paved bike trail, too.
Yes, there's, and there's a whole bunch of paved bike trail around that area. So it might be worth coming down and checking out for a longer weekend, but it's really exciting that we have actual mountain bike trails there instead of just deer trails.
Yeah, I think the main point of that is that the Lake Red Rock area is worth checking out as a recreational destination, but mountain biking just makes it another reason to check out.
Agreed.
Unlike, say, the next place.
Which was?
Fort Dodge, which, do you know anything about Fort Dodge, Jen?
I really don't.
The only things that I had known about Fort Dodge until I went there to bike was that I had a friend who was from there and hated it, and I knew some people who were there for medical stuff, and they didn't like it either. So I didn't have exactly a positive...
Hey, no offense if you're from Fort Dodge and like it.
No, they're just not famous that I know for anything. Like, it's not like, oh, go there for the big rubber band ball. the Fort Dodge State Fair is a great state fair. I just, you know...
Yeah.
I couldn't have named anything special about it.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, not to say that the people aren't good or anything. We're from Knoxville, what can I say? We have a racetrack.
Hey, fastest dirt track in the world.
And I guess that's kind of my point. Knoxville, you can say, oh, you have the dirt track, but Fort Dodge. But now, you know what I can say?
They've got good mountain biking.
Yeah, they have these really cool mountain bike trails. And
so, I didn't get to go on this because I couldn't use my right wrist for 2 weeks, which really sucks for biking. Side note, I figured out that I could brake, but I couldn't shift. So, anyhow, Anthony went and checked this out, also with Andy and Lori. So, what did you think?
Well, Andy and Lori had checked it out the month before,
mm-hmm.
and they liked it so much they went back. And it's an hour and a half drive. Like, it's not nothing. But the people who designed it did a phenomenal job of designing it. I talked to the guys who had put the trails in.
It was just two guys, right?
It was a team of people who did it, but it was really two guys who did the administration and, you know, mapping it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to discredit everyone else who helped.
That's a good point.
But the guy I talked to who seemed to be the one who did all the mapping the trails out, he would talk about every climb needed a reward. So, like, yeah, sure, climbing is part of the game, but what do you get on the backside of it? And if you ride these trails, you'll understand what he was talking about. Because, yeah, the little climbs would have fun little downhills, but the big climbs would have crazy fun downhills. Like, there was this one that was down a ravine, and you would drop into one side of the ravine, pop out, and just keep going back and forth down the ravine. Like, I don't know, skiing on your bike.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, and so it made a lot of sense what this guy was saying. And we talked to some other people who were there from out of town, too. And it was really cool to see the grassroots, I think is what they call it, trail building out there.
Do you know when the trails first got put in?
Oh, I think they said 2014 is when the first little bit got put in.
So it's been developing over the last, what, 5 to 8 years then?
Yeah, and the thing with this section is because it's just the two guys, if they didn't like something, they would just tear it out and put a better part in. They'd be like, oh, that doesn't flow very well, so we'll do another one. So yeah, it's been there for, you know, 5-6 years,
mm-hmm.
but it's been refined over that time too. It wasn't just put in and forgot about.
Yeah, that sounds a lot different from what we face here in Des Moines, just because there are so many more people. You have to deal with so many more opinions on changing things.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who you have to try to appease, and they'll yell at you if you don't. But this place, they just had to make the landowners happy, and the landowners like mountain biking.
Hey, that's a good thing to start with.
Yeah, and from talking to them, they got huge buy-in from the community, too.
Oh, so one of the things that I remember you specifically talking about there are some of the wooden features. Tell me about that.
Mm, yeah, so they weren't afraid to actually put features in, which was interesting. They would have, you know, skinnies. There was a giant teeter-totter that Lori about rode off and dropped 5 feet. I've never seen anything like it. But there was also bridges.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There were bridges that were well-made, and they were fresh. So, you know, it's not like they weren't rotted out yet.
Yeah.
But everything flowed well, and you could tell that if it didn't work, they would put a bridge in, or if there was a problem, they would do something else with it. And that place, in case you were wondering, is called Lizard Creek. It's up in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Is it worth the drive? I don't know. Do you like good mountain bike trails? I think it is. And it's close enough that you can do it in a day and not completely hate it. But it is kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Fun fact, guys, if you haven't guessed it, Anthony really doesn't like spending too much time in a car.
No, if I have to drive more than an hour to go mountain bike, I'm not a fan of it. So this is not a, that's also not a knock on Fort Dodge. I just hate driving.
No, we will definitely be going back here just because I really want to check it out. And I'm actually allowed out of my wrist brace now, so I can do that.
That's very good.
Yes.
Do you want to have gear talk time?
We do. Do we have a bell?
No, we never have a bell. We always forget the dang bell.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. There's one on the table, but we're not at the table today.
Yeah, we migrated for today. But for gear talk time, I thought we would do a little bit different since it's now nighttime all the time.
Okay, not all the time. We're not in Alaska.
It's always dark, 24/7.
It is dark every time that it seems like we have time to bike.
Which means we need lights.
Yes, lights are important.
What kind of lights do we have?
So we have, well, let's start with different places that you can put lights.
Yeah, so usually people put them on their handlebars and their helmet. You can put them on your hands or your knees, but it just doesn't work that well.
Yeah, so I started riding with a light just on my handlebars, which if I'm on the road actually isn't that big of a problem because like you're going in a straight line and there's street lamps. And so you kind of get a little bit of, you know, ambient lighting around you.
Yeah. And when was the last time you ever saw a roadie turn? So it's
they only go straight.
I've only seen them go straight.
The problem with that for mountain biking is that you've got more things, you know, there's sharper turns, there's rocks or roots on the trail, and it's helpful to be able to turn your head and see what is, you know, not just straight ahead of you. So we also both have lights that go on our helmets.
And part of that I've heard is that if you only have one light, you don't get very good depth perception because it's only lit from one area. I don't know if I believe that, but I've heard that before. And we have a helmet light and a handlebar light, and that is generally what most mountain bikers have.
And I've seen it different ways, too. We actually have, we've got a conversion kit so that we can mount our lights onto our helmets. Some people, especially when they're first starting out, just do headlamps. That headlamps don't stay on my helmet well. But in the winter, if it's really cold and I'm biking in my ski helmet, that does work better with a headlamp.
And that's the thing with the lights. There's no one, like, you should get this one kind. This is the one brand to get. They really seem to be all over the place. Like Knight Rider, Lezyn.
Lezyne. I love the lights. I cannot pronounce it.
Yeah, Lumina, Bontrager, this cheap knockoff brands on Amazon. There's so many different kinds that it's not easy to say, hey, just get this one. So we can tell you what we use. I'm a huge fan of the Lumina 1000 lights because you can mount them on your helmet, you can put them on your handlebars, and they seem to last a long time.
That's the one that actually I think we both have on our helmet, and then you have another one that goes on your handlebars, right?
I have, yes. I have a backup one on my handlebars. So the biggest thing that I would recommend is have three lights if you can afford it. You know, a helmet one and a handlebar one and then a backup one.
Ooh, we're forgetting one. Speaking of backing up, if you're going to be riding, well, really any time, you should also have a rear flashing red light. Just so people can see you from behind. That is especially important if you're going to be on any roads. But it's also really nice because if you're coming up behind someone else on a bike, you should know where they are so you don't hit them.
Yeah, and the rear lights, I don't know. The cheap ones seem to do as well as the expensive ones.
I think I have like a $12 rear light that has worked for 2 years.
Yeah, and I have the same one that I use to go everywhere.
Anyhow, I interrupted you. Backup lights.
Backup lights. Yeah, because if your headlight goes dead, it's not fun anymore. The Lumina 1000s, they are like, what, $100?
Ish.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can find them on sale, which is nice, but that's about what they run.
Yeah, and they have different modes. And the only mode that I care about is as long as they have a high, medium, and low, and off. I know a bunch of them have, like, a flashing mode and a daytime flashing, but, you know, who cares? I mean, at night, I don't care. So, I use Illumina for my helmet. And then for the handlebars, I have Illumina backup, just because we had it laying around. But what do we use for the handlebars?
I'm just going to call it Lezine. We have the Lezine 1100i, which what I particularly like about that light is it's a good light in and of itself, but it comes with a battery pack that also attaches to your bike. And so it plugs into the light and you can use it for even longer, which is really nice if you want to run a brighter setting, but still want to go on a longer ride.
Yeah, the battery or the light itself has a battery, and then it can also plug into an extra battery, which is super unique. And you haven't had any problem with it yet?
No, so I've had this for just about a year now, and I have loved it. It's also really nice having the battery pack, just because I try to charge my lights after every ride, but every once in a while I'll forget, and I've got now, like, I do a really short ride and forget to charge the light, and I go out for another ride and the battery pack lets me actually complete my ride. But yeah, I actually just got Anthony one of these for his birthday, and so far his is, I mean, you've done what, one ride with it?
Yes, but I've done a couple with the ones you have.
Yeah, he kind of stole my lights. I was very motivated to buy him his own.
But the cool thing about these lights is that with the battery pack on, race mode is what they call it, 1,100 lumens, which is stupid bright. It'll last for, I think, 2.5 hours on crazy bright mode. And then you knock that down to only 650 lumens, and the thing lasts for, like, 4 hours.
Yeah, I very typically ride it with the medium brightness, which I'm usually, I don't like to ride alone on mountain bike trails at night, and so I'm usually in a group ride. And surprise, surprise, I'm typically not the leader. So since I'm following other people and have a basic idea of, like, you know, what's farther up ahead, I can run the medium amount and be perfectly fine.
What do you think? If you could only have a handlebar light or a headlight, which one would you rather have?
Oh, that's hard, because I really like my handlebar light, but having the headlight, like, that allows me to see things to the side. And if I get off my bike, I can check out other things. I started riding with only the handlebar light. So if you're trying to get into it and you can only do one, I would say maybe do that and then pick up a cheap headlamp or something if you decide you need more.
Boy, good thing we don't prep for these episodes a lot, because I would say the exact opposite.
Yeah, I could be swayed the other way. I'm just, based off what I did, I mean, I can tell you I survived for a year on that.
And you had a good handlebar light, too.
Yes, I did. I had a very good handlebar light. If I would have had a shitty handlebar light, there is no way that would have worked. Because I could just, I did turn it up to full brightness sometimes so I could see farther ahead.
So the one, we should talk about beam patterns, because the cheap Amazon light I had, it had a spot beam and a wide beam. And I had the spot beam on my handlebars, and it was about the worst thing ever. Because every time you would turn a little bit, you could no longer see the trail. Like, you would turn to correct, and you could go check out the woods beside you because you weren't seeing in front of you.
Yeah, and that's something else that is worth mentioning on, you know, just talking about riding at night in the dark, is we don't ride Banner when it's pitch dark out. You know, we don't ride the hard trails. We don't ride the really rocky sections where you need to be able to see everything and, you know, see ahead so you can plan for it. We definitely ride more of the green-blue trails where we know it's going to be pretty straight and flat, and there are home trails, so we've got it memorized, and it's fine because we know it's coming up.
And?
Meaning that if you can't see perfectly the way that we ride in the winter, that's less of an issue.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, 1,000 lumens is good enough for us. There are some lights that go to, geez, I think I talked to someone that had an 8,000 lumen headlight.
Holy.
Yeah, I've talked to people who have had cars flash their brights at them because their lights are so bright. And if you spend, you know, $300 on a light, you can get crazy high battery and crazy high run or lumens, what they call it.
Yeah.
And that's why I say if you can only buy one and you're going to spend $400 on a freaking light, I would go with a headlight, the one that goes on your helmet.
Well, hey, if you're going to spend $400 on it, why not split two and two between it?
And that's a good point, too.
But yeah, it's worth considering if you do still want to ride more of those technical things at night, or if you are going to new trails where maybe you really need to be able to see ahead.
Buy a helicopter.
I have no idea where that came from.
Because then it can just have the spotlight to light up the whole the whole trail.
Just bring the sun with you?
Just bring the sun with you.
Okay, so if you don't have $1 million to spend, I would recommend investing in a good handlebar and a good headlight if you're going to do something like that. Because you don't want to be stupid. You want to be safe.
Are ours not good? Because we're doing a 24-hour race here in February. I hope they're good.
Hey, I just bought you a new one.
Yeah. Boy, that was a bit of a rough segment. Summarize it for me, Jen, because I've had a little too much to drink.
Lights are good. You don't need the crazy expensive lights. You should probably have two lights. I can summarize it well?
What's our recommendation? Or what's my recommendation? I'll tell you. The Lumina 1000 is my favorite light on Earth. And then the Lezine
11,000i.
No. 1100i. Because it has a battery pack and can run for a long time.
And one other thing that I did not note earlier is that battery pack can be used to charge things such as your phone, or like it would work to charge my bike computer if I needed it to. So,
yeah. Perks. And there is also another option.
Which is?
A hub generator.
Ooh, hub generators are awesome.
Yeah, it's like the golden standard for lights, but they're really expensive and I don't have one. So I will leave that to people.
Well, can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, it's a hub generator. It takes the motion of your wheels and converts it to electricity for your light.
So if you're going to do like a really long bikepacking trip, that's where I've heard of a lot of people who have these because they don't have a place to charge their lights every 6 hours.
Or ultra distance racers will use them too. And sometimes they have a USB port. So you can charge your phone off your bike and they take like 2 or 3% away or 3 or 5% away from your efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So to have light forever, it's totally worth it. But I don't have one, so I can't really speak to that. That's kind of the gold standard.
Yeah, we'll have to let you know. I'm sure we'll end up with one of these days. Like Anthony said, he's doing a 24-hour race in February. So we'll probably do some more research on lights over the winter, and we'll have to see if we change our opinions on anything.
Mm-hmm. So wrapping up here, we'll just go to the show notes down here. Boop-a-boop-a-boop. We heard back from some people about our last episode, and they seemed to like it. I was worried about the audio quality, but I actually listened to it on my phone, like a normal person would, instead of, you know, editing it. And it sounded pretty good. And some other people were like, yeah, there wasn't too much of a problem with it. So I appreciate the feedback, and we'll probably be doing that again in the future.
And yeah, if you listen to it and haven't given us feedback and have anything you'd like to suggest for changes in the future, we would...
Too late now!
No, we would love to hear that. I would love to hear that. Send it to me. I can ignore Anthony.
Yeah, we really like hearing from people. It's super cool to hear like, oh, this episode was interesting, or I didn't know that this area, Fort Dodge, had like bike trails. I'm going to go check it out. And I apologize, like I did last episode, for this one being a little rough. But this episode, I apologize for a completely different reason.
It was a rough day, guys. It's time to go ride a bike.
It's been a day. It's time to go bike. Well, tomorrow.
Yes. Anyhow, Anthony, do you have anything else that you would like to add?
No, I do not. Thanks for sticking with us. Hopefully the next episode goes a little smoother.
Until next time, you can find us on Instagram at bottom.bracket.biking. Hope you guys enjoyed listening and ride dirt, not mud.
Thanks a lot. Dog and cats don't mix.